it was like alcohol was always present. Alcohol was always around. He was always drinking. I think it was just, I was so conditioned to the environment that I was in that there was never any like, oh, dad's coming home or anything like that. It was just the way life was. It was just, everything just seems like it just went in one swoosh and then it was over and then I'd moved out.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to This Is Powerful with me, Paul Scholfall. In this podcast, I will speak to some incredible people about mindset, mental health, addiction, and recovery. And I'll share my own story throughout these conversations. We are well and truly in season 5 of the show, and we're doing a mini series focused on youth and addiction. We speak to some really inspirational young people about how they personally have been affected by addiction and recovery, and some who have been surrounded by the addiction of others as a young person. We also speak with professionals who are working in the addiction and recovery youth sector. There'll be a new episode every Thursday. In these episodes, we will be talking about drug and alcohol misuse, suicide, sexual abuse, and some other heavy topics. So please take care when listening. Hi, Melanie. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for coming down to This Is Powerful. I know it's been a long journey.
Yeah.
So I appreciate your time. To start off, I just wanted to know, this is our young people series. I just wanted to know from the beginning, like, where you're from and how was your early life? How was your early upbringing?
So I'm from a small town in Hertfordshire. I would say my upbringing from the beginning, from the start, was very turbulent. I was born to a very young mum, a dad who lost his dad when he was very young. And I think there was an issue with alcohol in him from before I was even born. So when you've already got that foundation and then you bring kids into the mix when you're not really fully done growing up yourself, yeah, it wasn't a great start.
How many siblings do you have?
I've got two. I've got a younger sister who's 21 and I have a younger brother, but my younger brother is from my mum and my stepdad. It's just me and my sister to my parents.
How was your, when you say turbulent, when did you notice at what kind of age that, I mean, did you know that something wasn't right early on, or was it just your life and then you compared it to others as you went along?
I think I always knew that there was something not right. You know, whenever I talked to people that were around me growing up, you know, she was a little madam and she was very aware and I was very grown up before, you know, I was a little adult at the age of 3. From everyone that I've spoken to. So I think I clocked on pretty quickly that my life was different. And growing up around adults, you're going to pick up their patterns, their behaviours. You see a lot, even if I was that young.
It's interesting because we speak to people that are children of alcoholics and people that have had trauma, and they have an incredible radar for behavior and emotions in other people, right? To read them pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's that hypervigilance.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you have to be aware of what's going on around you so that you can protect yourself. And, you know, and I also think there was a part of me that maybe wanted to get involved because it seemed fun when I was little, and I was kind of encouraged and enabled to, you know, act a certain way and be a certain way and say this and do that, and I would, and it was funny. And, you know, then soon it was like, oh, this isn't funny, this is quite serious, and there's things that I've been exposed to that I shouldn't have been exposed to from so young.
Yeah. How was your early school life? Was that affected by your dad's drinking?
I really struggled in school. It's like I found it easy to make friends and I was very likeable, but I was also a very easy target and people found it, I don't know, I think maybe because I bit back, because I was very outspoken, kids didn't like that, or they could get a reaction out of me. And I think that's what bullies thrive off, isn't it? And, you know, from as long as I can remember as a kid, I struggled with bullying. And I was thinking about this the other day and I was like, why was it me? Was it because that I was obviously different because of the environment that I was in at home? Could people see that? And they thought, oh, there's something different about her. So they I don't know. You know, that's something that I'm still trying to figure out and understand. But that continued from, you know, infant primary school way through until I left.
What would they have spotted in you that made you different at school early on? Because it's a really important point.
I think I had quite a light in me. I think despite everything that was going on at home, I was still very bright. I was still, you know, I walk into a room and people go, oh, that's Melanie. And I think that was what the issue was, maybe. I don't know if they saw the vulnerability because I think I hid it. I think it might have been something else.
Can you talk us through, like, what happened with your father and how that came in the house? So for me, when my dad drank, I used to be completely terrified. And that when he put the key in the door, the dog would usually leave if there was a problem. So we'd know that there's going to be a problem. So we'd walk out the back door as well. And my experience was we had quite a party house, and it was always fun in the beginning and it was great. But I was always waiting for that to turn into like fights or arguments or even just like an atmosphere of fear that would come over the house. How was it for you?
So I think my dad, we used to go to the pub a lot. It was like alcohol was always present. Alcohol was always around. He was always drinking. And it wasn't like there was anything that would maybe necessarily trigger anything straight away. It was just the way that he was. And this was something that, you know, I spoke to my mum the other day when I knew that I was coming here and speaking about this. And I was thinking back to my dad as a drunk, as an alcoholic. And I was like, I can't remember what he was like. What was, you know, like you're saying, you heard the door and you felt fear. I was like, I don't necessarily remember feeling that. And I don't, but I know that it happened. I know what I experienced. And she said it's because he was always drunk, you know, and there was maybe levels of how drunk he was, you know, that sometimes there was one of two ways that he'd come home. He'd come home reeking of alcohol, saying that, you know, but acting sober. Or he'd come home and he'd be wobbling all over the place. He would be slurring his words and be adamant that he wasn't drinking. So for me, I think with my dad, I was a direct target sometimes in terms of how he would speak to me, the things he would say to me, he would put me down. But I think it was just, I was so conditioned to the environment that I was in that there was never any like, oh, dad's coming home or anything like that. It was just the way life was.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to like, it was just, everything just seems like it just went in one swoosh and then it was over and then I'd moved out.
It sounds like it's quite traumatic. That's why. Do you ever think about smell of alcohol? Because I have this thing about, you can tell, there's a grey area. I used to date someone who was an alcoholic and I only found out later. And she used to drink vodka to hide the smell. And when I talked to her, I'd be thinking, is she drunk? Is that perfume? Like, what is that smell? I wasn't sure. And she'd deny that she had at the time. And I completely bought it because I'm like, yeah, no, maybe she hasn't. You know, pretended to be sober and stuff. But can you recognise that smell? Like, did your dad have a strong alcohol smell?
So it's funny because his drink of choice was vodka. And I think, especially a lot later on, it was mainly just vodka he was drinking. And it's the smell on the breath, isn't it? And then, like, the smell of cigarettes to, like, cover it up. Like, he was a heavy smoker as well.
That or mints.
Yeah.
People like mints.
Yeah, he used to chew mints all the time. Yeah. And chewing gum. Yeah. It's really weird because it's like, I speak about things and I'm like, oh, I get like a, oh, I remember that. And I remember it being like that. Yeah, or just really heavy aftershave. I can remember him smelling like
it's
that.
It's funny, right, how that, it's weird, isn't it, how people try to cover up.
But it's like so obvious because you can't, it's, you know, apart from obviously, like I say, when he was, like mom said, you know, he'd he'd come home, he'd stink of alcohol, but he'd be acting sober, and he'd also be saying to her, you know, that she's crazy, you know, what's she on about, you know, belittling her, manipulating her into thinking that she was wrong.
When did you kind of realise there was a problem? Was it that your mum was reacting to how your dad was?
I don't know. It's like I say, I think alcohol was just always around. I don't remember when it felt like it was a problem. You know, my mum and my dad's relationship got worse and worse and worse, you know, especially the last few years before they finally split up. They were arguing all the time. It got very, it wasn't violent, but it was scary. You know, some of the things I saw, the way that my mum was just hysterical in just, and I was there and I saw it all. And then the way that he would just turn really vicious with his words. But like, I think because it was going on for so long, I don't remember when it got so bad that I was like, you know, my dad and I had, you know, I remember like being daddy's little girl at whatever point, and I always wanted to be around him, and I always wanted to, you know, do things with him. And, but even though that was the case, like, he was still, like, he wasn't a parent. Do you know what I mean? It was just like, I was just a child, and he was just living his life and doing his thing. And I don't know, it's like really, it's just, like I said, everything's really strange, like, looking back on it, because it's like I can pinpoint certain things, but...
Well, it sounds like when people are drinking, there's no connection with others because they're stuck in self, isn't there? So you can be in the same room with someone, be completely separate. And the person drinking says that as well when they sober up, that they've never really had a connection because it was more about the booze that they're drinking kept them in solace in that way.
It's funny you say that. Like, I was talking to my mum and she said that the alcohol just always came first. She was like, right from the beginning, she was like, you were a baby and I'd need nappies. You'd have two or three left and I'd message him and say, we need nappies. And he'd be like, oh, I'll get them tomorrow. And, you know, this came into the aspect of like, he was controlling. He was manipulative. He had access, you know, he'd make my mum send 2/3 of her wages to him to cover bills and food. By the time we left, we were in £3,000 worth of debt for the rent. We were £2,500 worth of debt in gas and electric. The water bill was behind. Council tax hadn't been paid for about a year. So it's like, he had control of all these things and he fed that he was doing one thing with it, but in reality he was spending it all on alcohol. Right from the beginning, when I needed nappies, the drink came first, because he'd come home with a bottle of wine but not the nappies. You know, I was a baby and we'd always have to be at the pub. He'd always have to be around somewhere where there was alcohol. My first birthday party was, my dad booked and paid for it all. My mum wanted to book the hall that was at the bottom of the road, and he was like, no, I need a bar. There needs to be a bar there. So he booked somewhere where there was a bar, there was access to that. It was like, you know, there was always a priority, and it wasn't his family, it wasn't me, it wasn't the fact that I was a baby. It was, where can I get my next drink?
How does that make you feel? Because it's difficult, isn't it? Because we all crave love off our parents, and when you're not given it because there's a disease in the way and someone's choosing alcohol above you, how has that affected you?
I think because, especially when it's your dad, do you know what I mean? Like, you think that, and you see the relationships that people have with their parents, and you're like, why is my dad not like that? You know, and it's sad, and it's, but it's just reality. It just is what it is, and that's just the way he is. And I think there was a time where I cared about him a lot, you know, and I just wanted the best for him. But at the same time, you know, I needed to do what was right for me, and there came a point where I couldn't talk to him anymore. I had to walk away from that because he was draining every ounce of me. You know, and he was doing it not because he wanted to be there for me, but because he wanted to get to my mom. So it's like, you know, I think everything, it's just, like I say, it's just been so turbulent, you know, up until when I sort of realised that everything that I thought I was, and, you know, my patterns, my behaviours, my, just how I react in certain situations, was not because I'm this horrible person, but it was because I had a horrible person who was really horrible to me.
Mm. I mean, can you see that? It makes so much sense, doesn't it? Because everyone needs attention, everyone needs some love and stuff like that. And if you're not taught how that works on a healthy way, then you've got no chance, have you, really?
Well, because you have no experience with it. You know, and my mum, like, she was a good mum and she did everything that she could with, you know, what she could do at the time. And, you know, I've got good memories with her. Do you know what I mean? Things like dancing around the living room in the summer and the windows open and MTV is on the background. And, you know, there's little things like that. Like, you know, she tried to feed, like, good memories in. But I just think the last few years, especially, I think all I just saw was just this negative black cloud over anything that was to do with my childhood. And I didn't see any of the good. I feel like now I can see sort of through who, you know, through all of that, and, you know, rebuild those relationships and, I don't know, just try and find the good in a really bad sort of situation. Like, we're not there anymore. He's not, you know, he's completely irrelevant to our lives. And that's something that's really weird to look back on as well, is like how much control he had then to, like, the fact that he's just no one now. But, like, mentally, he's still there.
Hi, it's Paul here. I just wanted to take a moment to say thank you, and to say if you've heard something on the show that's moved you, please follow, rate, or review the show, and it'd be amazing if you could share it. Now back to the show. It's powerful, isn't it? The stuff that happens in families. And it's terrible, because alcoholism, it doesn't just ruin the person that is consuming the alcohol, it ruins everyone around them. Families, friends, relationships. It's a bad ripple effect. What was the point that your dad got out of the situation or left? And
so I was 12, and we'd got home from school, and my dad was going out, and he told me and my sister to do dishwashing, and he didn't come back home until about 11 o'clock at night. I'd forgotten, I didn't do it. And he's walked through the door, and mum's basically saying, you know, because we still haven't had dinner. That was a regular thing. We never ate until 10, 11 o'clock at night between when I was that young. And that was just the way it was. And he comes through the door, and, you know, there's a bit of an argument that brews between my mum and my dad, because he's come home, there's no food in the fridge, freezer, he's not bought anything back. But the problem was that I hadn't done the dishwashing. And he started getting really nasty and basically blaming me for all of the problems. You know, that thing there, that little bitch, if it wasn't for her, then, you know, none of this would be going on. It's all her fault. And I'm sat there, literally just listening, like...
At 12?
Yeah, this was 12. Yeah. So you can imagine, you know, that's just one snippet of something that I can, you know, this was going on for months prior, when he started getting really vicious towards me because I spoke my mind and I said things how it was. And I think I may have turned around and said to him, you know, that night that, you know, well, it's 11 o'clock, you said you were going to be home by whatever point, dinner time's passed. And he really didn't like that. I was like that.
Well, it's hearing the truth back, isn't it?
Yeah, and he doesn't want to hear that.
Mm.
You know, not only that, he'd probably been drinking. So anyway, it escalated and escalated. He got a bit very aggressive. He'd brought a sledgehammer in the house, was threatening to smash up my mum's car. My mum tried to call the police. He snapped the house phone in half. And it just, I don't really remember much. There's just like images that I, of that night that I can remember. And then I remember, so I'd gone to my neighbour's house. We'd called the police. I think I called my auntie. We went, and she came and got me and my sister out of the house while my mum was dealing with the police. And because my uncle just lived down the road at this point. And that was the last night that he was there and he was at the house. I think my mum just was like, she can take all the shit that she was getting from him, but when it was on her little girl, her firstborn, she was just like, I can't do this anymore, I can't have this anymore. She managed to get a restraining order between her and him in the house, but not, it wasn't against me and my sister. And that was when things started to change. We'd still had contact with him for a few months afterwards. You know, everyone was telling my mum not to do that, you know, to keep him away from me and my sister. But he was just very difficult, and he knew how to get to my mum. And eventually she just had to go no contact with him because, like I said, he would just say whatever he could to get in her head and make her feel like she was doing the wrong things, try and claw her back. So the contact was literally between me and my dad. So he would message me or call me, and we'd see him. And
how was that? Because after that, sounds like a horrendous evening. How was it for you to still contact him and him contact you?
It was just the way it was. I'd get frustrated sometimes because when I wouldn't want to see him, he'd, you know, it'd be a big song and dance, and he'd put on the dramatics and make me feel bad about it. You know, but I don't really remember. I just remember seeing him still, but it was never quality time. We didn't do things with him. We'd sit with him in the car when he drove around doing whatever, going wherever. You know, I was always the middleman. I was always the one that was the in-between the whole way through. And, you know, sometimes I put myself there, or I'd get myself involved in whatever was going on. You know, I think that was me trying to, I don't know, maybe take control of the situation, because I could see that mum didn't have it under control. But then I was like 10, 11, 12, do you know what I mean? That wasn't a position that I should even be in. These aren't conversations that I should be involved in. You know, I should never have been put in that situation at that age.
When, after that, when he left, did he try to sort himself out at all, or was he just still the same behaviour?
He said he would. You know, it was like, oh, like I'm, you know, I'm not drinking as much. He never admitted he had a problem. I think he might have once to meet on the phone after, as, you know, this was when I wasn't seeing him anymore. But yeah, he just did what he did. You know, there was no accountability. Mm-hmm. There was no, you know, unless it got him something. You know, yeah. I think he tried to get my mum back for a while and tried to use me to do that. But as soon as he knew that that wasn't happening, you know, he just did what he could to try and attack my mum, I guess. That's what it always, like, kind of boiled down to.
You know what's amazing is the powerful, you know, when someone has alcoholism, they really believe where they're at, and they can persuade the situation really well, because they sit in the real emotions, don't they? If they're frustrated or they're scared, they just live that role. Like, they'd be brilliant actors because they live that moment, don't they?
Yeah, it's manipulative and it's narcissistic. Completely, and that is, unfortunately, when you're an alcoholic, when you have a dependency on something, that is all that matters. And you become this, you know, like you say, like a persona of something else to be able to get what you want. Because at first it starts with the hiding, the fact that you're drinking and that there's a problem. And then it just becomes this narrative that you continually hold for anything.
It's like this whirlpool that just drags everyone and everything in, right? But is your dad still around?
Yeah.
Yeah. How old would he be now?
He's 11 years older than my mum, 55, maybe.
And was he functioning? Like, did he have a career or a job or?
When I was younger, he was a, I can't remember, he worked in an office, wore a suit. Was very driven, I think. Very smart. My dad is a very smart man. And then he eventually was just working at the local tip. I don't remember when he started there or why he left his other job. And then he was working there until right the way through, I think, until I stopped having anything to do with him. I don't know what he does now. I don't know what his life is like. When someone I know that saw him and said that he looked exactly how he would if he continued down the path he was on. You know, very ill, losing teeth, skin like leather, skinny. My mum actually said that she saw him a few weeks ago, and she said that there was just, she saw this figure, and she was like, it did something to her, like to her body, but she just, she didn't recognise him at all until he turned around. She was like, there was a face that he made when she realised that it was him. So for someone that you were with, I think they were together, what, 13 years? And didn't recognise him.
So it's such a powerful illness, because it's just, I've watched people just, a friend of mine who was a very smart guy, owned clubs in London, like, charming guy, all the girls wanted to be with him, all the boys wanted to be his friend. And the last time I saw him was at a wedding, and he died about a year after. And he basically, I've never seen anything like it. I saw him at this wedding, I didn't recognise him either. He was like a big 16 stone man. He weighed probably like 9 stone, none of his clothes fitted. He'd been, when I got there, apparently he'd been there for 2 days, drinking all around the clock, and just, it wasn't offensive to anybody, he was just gone, you know. And then basically he didn't last another few months, I think, after that, which was a shame.
Yeah, that's really
But the sad thing, the good thing about the thing with some people that have alcoholism is that they get to a point, probably way beyond anyone else can imagine, and they see themselves or they hear themselves, something happens, and then they go and get help, and they can turn it all the way around, you know, which is a miracle, basically. But how did you get to speak to NACOA, which is a brilliant organisation?
So last year I had a little bit of a spiritual awakening, I guess what you could... It just feels really weird saying that. It feels like a weird, strange, taboo thing, but that's what it was.
Don't worry, I think I've had a few, literally. What does that mean, by the way? Because for me, it meant like I felt like I was waking up or coming out of a bad dream and seeing things with more clarity from a different perspective.
It felt like this really abrupt, like you say, like wake up call to like, okay, the world is not how I thought it was. The way I am is not what I thought I was. And there was just all of these weird things that just started to like fall into place or make sense. And it was, I don't know, but it was also, it was just really, like I say, it was like coming home to myself. I think that's the best way to sort of say it. It was like, who is Melanie? And, you know, what does she want to do moving forward with her life? Letting go of everything that maybe was like put there that wasn't mine to hold. So from that, I decided, you know, I need to do something with my experience. I need to tell my story. I need to try and help other people in whatever way I can. So I was like, right, volunteering, you know. So going back maybe the year before, I had some counselling at uni, and I saw this lovely lady called Barbara, and she was like, in one of these sessions, she went, so you're a child of an alcoholic. And I went, oh, yeah. She was like, no, like, it's a thing. And I was like, right, okay. And probably cried a lot after that. And she wrote down 2 charities on a bit of paper. One of them was Al-Anon, I think. And the other one was NACOA. And then I folded that bit of paper up and threw it in a drawer and didn't look at it again for however long. And then I came across it when I, you know, doing whatever at home. I just typed it in and went, right, I can volunteer with them. So that was, it was as simple as that. It was like, I need to do something that feels better with, you know, from using, and reached out to them. Jumped on one of the, it was like a 6-week course, I think. So an hour a week or so, where they sort of talked through NACOA, what they do, how they help, how you can help, you know, alcoholism, what it is, how it affects the body, you know, the types of children that you may, you know, fall under as a child of an alcoholic, you know, when you're growing up, the characteristics that, you know, you have or that you took on. And yeah, and then it just kind of went from there. And I love it. I love feeling like I'm making a difference. I did some volunteering in Leeds building school, college, something like that, in September. And I was literally just talking to whatever students would come up about the charity, you know, what we do, and just kind of signposting it to them. And you could see on, you know, the look on some of their faces, you know, the ones that needed it and the ones that were just there for the sweets. And even just knowing that, you know, 3 out of the 40 people that may have come over might have got something out of that, you know, that's enough for me to want to continue working with them. You know, growing up, I don't feel like there was enough support, you know, not enough people in my corner. There was a lot of adults that knew that what was going on, they were aware, the schools were aware, but, you know, they weren't, like, I remember just getting in trouble all the time at school, you know, and, you know, for being late, even though that was because my dad had to stop off at the shop to go get vodka before school. Like, genuinely, we'd stop off at the garage and he'd been there 10 minutes chatting away. And I learned the behavior, like the pattern of the guy behind the counter, and he'd turn a certain way, and that's how I knew that my dad was getting vodka, because it was on a certain shelf and he'd turn a certain way and we'd pick these little vodka bottles up.
That's amazing though, isn't it? It's just, I have good pattern recognition as well from stuff.
I think it's just that, like I say, the hypervigilance. It's you being aware, you want to know what they're doing, when they're doing, and, you know, you just, you learn it because you feel like you have to.
Did you not tell the teachers, you just give up or just think, how can you explain that?
I don't really know. I think I just went in and I said sorry for being late. And it was just like a kind of thing, you know. I did have a counsellor in like primary school. That was when obviously I was being dropped off. When it came to secondary, I was walking myself in, but I was late because I have ADHD and I'm forgetful and I'm faffing around before I leave. Because my dad wasn't around at that point, but you know, and the counsellors were aware and the teachers were aware that things were going on at home. You know, I found a certificate in my memory box, and it was like, it was an award, you know, for, even though, you know, she's going through a hard time, she's always very smiley. And it was like, so you're aware of all the things that were going on, but like anything, I wonder if it was because I think some of the teachers, you know, I'd leave class and I'd go and to the counsellor's office, or I'd go and sit in the room with, I don't know what you describe them as, like pastoral people.
Pastoral care.
Yeah. And yeah. I'd, you know, there was kind of an element of like, maybe they saw it as like special treatment. And obviously then all the other kids are seeing that, and they're seeing me leave class, and it's like, why does she get to leave? That's kind of what it felt like. Look, looking back now, I'm like, was it a problem because I seemed to get more attention? But it was like, in reality, I had all this stuff,
isn't it?
Yeah, because I just, you know, and I was like forced to like cope with this situation that I was in, you know. And some, you know, there was, you know, like I had a really good counsellor and she was great, but it's just like there was like elements of certain support in one area and then not in the other. And
what did they say to you when you did in the car course, and was that really, really enlightening? That there's different type of reactions for a child of an alcoholic, and even though that is a thing. So for NACOA is the National Association of Children of Alcoholics, right?
So I think one of the things that stuck out to me was just how damaging alcohol actually is on the body and the nervous system and things like that. Like that, I don't know, like, I don't think I quite realised, you know, that alcohol is the one drug that can kill you from the withdrawals, because it can just send your body into shock and that's it. And, you know, it was like, why is that, you know, that's well known, that's a fact, that's science, but alcohol is like pushed so much, and that kind of, I don't know, that was a thing for me at the time.
Yeah, when you realise what it actually is, you kind of can go through a stage of thinking, how the hell is it advertised? How do they sell it? Why is it shiny lights? Why is it sold at supermarkets, gas stations, wherever?
But like, I found it something really hard. I found that really hard to sort of deal with going through, especially the last, you know, like, I looked on the bottle of a gin. There's no ingredients on it. There's no ingredients on any alcohol. It's like, what's really in it? Do you know what I mean? But like you're saying, it's just pushed so much, and we're made to feel like drinking is sort of everything. That's how you have fun. That's how you socialize. It's how you mingle, how you get to know people. But yeah, when they started talking about, you know, the types of children of alcoholics, you know, listening to what they said about them, you know, you've got like the hero child, the scapegoat, you know, the one that tries to sort of be funny and defer, you know, with humour and things like that. It was because I resonated with like certain elements of like each of them. It was just like, oh, like it is, this is when it started to settle in that like, oh, this is a thing. There is a reason why I am the way I am. A lot of it was developed as a coping mechanism. You know, I think I definitely would describe myself more as like the hero child. I tried to, like you say, get myself involved, you know, be aware of what was going on. I mothered my sister, still do now, a lot, which I think was definitely like a protective thing. And I think I definitely tried maybe to protect my mum a lot too, like from my dad. And then I'd also try and control what my dad was doing, in terms of like, I'd make it apparent and known, like, especially later on, like when he wouldn't really be listening to what I was saying, but in terms of like, alcohol's really bad, like you need to get help, like you need to stop drinking, like I'd always, you need to stop. But like that was never taken too well, and it was always deflected with whatever nonsense he'd come out with.
Did you find it almost comforting though, that you found out that this was a thing and there was behaviours that other people, like thousands of kids would have in the country?
Yeah, and but it also, it made me quite sad to sort of have like another label. And I know that sounds, you know, but it is, it's just another thing. It's just like, a, oh, okay, so there's all this trauma that I went through, and now I'm a child of an alcoholic, and I'm someone with ADHD, and I'm someone with anxiety and depression.
I've
and
got a good list too.
It just goes on and on and on and on. And
do you know what though, to interrupt, is that that can be your asset, because you can use all of that pain and all of those things to help other people and build back self-esteem. And that's what we do with Stride Foundation, which is our charity. So we go into schools and we do talks to explain all the stuff that me and you are talking about. And we give out Nakoa stuff there as well, just to let them have a phone line if they've got a problem with a parent, but also for the kids as well, because it's easy to go down the same route, you know, as a parent, basically.
Yeah, and, you know, I think what Nakoa do is incredible, and the people that run it, you know, that work for it, the volunteers, you know, there's all this one goal in mind, and it is to try and reduce the harm that is done for alcohol, and to help kids that, you know, I have friends whose parents are alcoholics, and I know it because I know what an alcoholic parent looks like. Whether or not they know it, I'm not sure. You know, you can sort of see, you can sort of tell, but it's like, I know. So when I did volunteering, I think I put something up on my story, and I had over 100 people click on the Nakoa tag, which just makes you think, like, yeah, maybe some people were just interested in who the charity are and what they do, but also were maybe a fair few of those people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
people, children of alcoholics.
People usually don't click buttons in certain areas for certain reasons.
So, you know, I know that what I'm doing, and know that my story, I know that what I went through can be used to do something better.
Yeah.
Do know what I mean? I'm not the best at explaining and looking back and remembering things, because it's just, it is, a lot of it is a blur. A lot of it I dimmed down and I shunned away, and I, like I say, I ran away from home and I never wanted to look back. Mm. But I'm not going to be able to grow or actually deal with it unless I talk about it and I understand it. And working with Nakoa helped me understand myself more, helped me understand my dad more, you know, helped me build my relationships back up, step away from the things that don't, you know, serve me and who I am and make me feel good about myself. Because I could identify with something, I could understand who I was now more.
Yeah, that's power. When you are, when you have knowledge about yourself, then you have power about yourself. If someone's listening that's gone through or going through what you've been through, what would you suggest they do?
You just need to talk to someone, you know, reach out to the charities, reach out to a friend or an adult that, you know, might be able to help or understand, or just listen to what it is that you're going through. Do not think that you're alone, because you're not. And just to keep going, because things will get better.
I love the bit about not alone. The most important thing is there's thousands of us around, and there's so much information online, isn't there? And if you're a child that a parent's drinking, you can phone Nakoa, all these other charities. We help with educating kids at Stride. There's also Al-Anon, which you mentioned. There's ACA, which is Adult Children of Alcoholics, which is a brilliant program for helping people. So there are places you can go. If you are a young person listening, how would you, this may seem obvious to us, but how would you know as that person that does your, if your guardian or your parent is an alcoholic, how do you know if they are and that you qualify to phone these help, one of these helplines?
I think you look at the patterns and then you sort of think to yourself, would I have a problem if I was drinking that way? Would my kids think that I have a problem if I was using alcohol as much as they are? You know, do you remember the last time that they were sober? Do you remember what they were like? Do you remember even what they look like? You know, how do they treat you? How do they talk to you? You know, what is the priority in your household? You know, do they isolate themselves? Do you find them lying? There's like various questions and observations that you can make, and at the end, like, you know, I think deep down you will be able to tell that there's something not quite right, and you just have to trust that instinct. And even if you're wrong, you know, you can talk to someone who is qualified in this area, and they will be able to guide you. They'll be able to ask you the right things and, you know, put you in a direction of, you know, maybe there is an issue there, or there isn't an issue there, and maybe it's something else.
Brilliant. Melanie, thank you very much.
That's all right, thank you.
This is Powerful is brought to you by Stride Foundation, which educates children about addiction through school talks and provides some basic support for those struggling with addiction. To find out more what we do, please head over to www.stridefoundation.com. You can also donate. Please donate. It will help us to break the stigma of addiction. It will help us to educate more young people, and it will allow us to bring you more episodes. Thank you. See you next time.